Time now for the Yahoo Sports College Podcast with Dan Wetzel.
See, this would have been a nice conversation if we were sitting around fishing.
Pete Thamel.
With a moderately flavored domestic beer.
Yeah.
And SI's Pat Forty.
You know what sounds more brutal? Being carved up and served on plates. From Buddy's standpoint, you'll take it.
Here's Pat, Pete, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. We got a special guest. We're adding to the ranks here. Eric Edholm, Yahoo Sports, NFL Draft. What is your title, Eric? Guru, reporter, expert, analyst.
Grand poobah. Yeah, those all work. I mean, I don't get called expert but 1 month a year, so I'm going to milk it for whatever I can right now.
Eric handles the NFL draft for us. And you guys, anybody who's on our site knows that. He writes all year round basically about it. And that intersection of the sport, he can be found at Eric_Edholm on Twitter. He's a great follow there. And he is on because he and Pete, and Charles Robinson, although I think it's really Eric did all the work. Pete just glommed on for glory.
Just like
usual.
On the pod.
Yep. Trying to get a little shine from everyone else. They continued a great tradition that our late colleague Therese Paler used to do. It was called the Juice Team, the All Juice Team. And Therese started this when he was in Kansas City. And continued it through his time with us at Yahoo. And if you know our pod or whatever, Therese passed away suddenly in February. It was a very tragic and sad day for all of us that knew him and liked him. And one of the things we wanted to do was to continue the All Juice tradition, the All Juice Team tradition, use it as a way to continue to raise money for the Therese Paler Scholarship, which is at Howard University, is alum, where he's an alum. There's t-shirts, there's hoodies. They're really good looking shirts too. And the All Juice Team's just fun. That's the thing about Therese. Therese loved football as much as anybody I've ever met. Therese could have been a coach. He played high school football. He could have been a coach, except he was just a great reporter and communicator. So he got around the game that way. But Therese loved football. He loved people that had that same love. And that's sort of part of being an All Juice player. So we have you guys had a tough job. You had to come up with the All Juice Team that Therese would like, because, you know, you got to honor him the right way. So hopefully he's not, you know, trying to get in the comments section to rip you guys, because Therese would do that. Therese would debate these spots. He would not hesitate. So, Eric, and tell us quickly about what it means to be an All Juice Team member. It's not just the best player. There's more to it than that.
Yeah, I think the three words that were sort of the pillars were effort, performance, and attitude. And you know, I mean, Therese had all those too. I mean, he was the guy. I remember him actually texting me at about midnight one night almost a year ago, asking me about Trey Adams, a guy who was undrafted, who made the Juice Team, but he just liked his style of play. He wanted somebody who was a grinder, also somebody who had, who showed it on the field, even if there were some questions. And I love the fact too that it's not all just all-stars. You know, it's not all the guys that everybody has heard of. It's two from the top of round one, two from the bottom, et cetera. And, you know, basically four guys per round, including some undrafted guys. So we tried our best to call from the ranks and, you know, represent as many Therese players as we could. I felt a lot of pressure. I was like, man, would Therese like this guy? I hope so. You know, and I made about 15 or 20 switches along the way, but we like the squad we've come up with.
All right. Well, let's start with, we're not going to go through all of them. Check it out on Yahoo Sports. Really encouraged. Great piece. If you're a college football fan, NFL fan, or NFL draft fan, it's great. And I think I don't know how much these guys know about getting this honor, but this is a really cool honor because you have to earn this. Let's start with the two biggest names on this board, Ohio State's Justin Field and Alabama's Najee Harris. What is it about those two, Pete and Eric? You can maybe each take one. Why those two as all juice players?
Well, I'll just say, like, when Charles and Pete and you know, Al Toby, our editor, were all kind of texting and sort of throwing ideas around, you know, the quarterback was obviously crucial. This year, there are five first-round prospects. I think all, you know, any of the five could have been candidates. But as we were sort of debating them, the fact that Justin Fields has kind of been almost the guy who's had the hardest path to this point. He's been sent through the meat grinder a little bit from the draft analysts, the anonymous sources, you know, questioning this. I mean, oh, he played baseball. He has a baseball throwing motion, you know, just stuff that seems a little trivial and stupid about it. But, you know, the fact that he also was a very juicy player who could run, throw, you know, had moxie, played his, you know, tail off against Clemson. All those things seemed to point in that direction. It just sort of made sense for me. And I don't know about you, Pete, but it just, you know, he was the one that kind of just stood out a little bit more from the others in that regard.
Yeah, I think, you know, Fields is interesting, and there's been a lot of oxygen wasted on Justin Fields, I think, in the past month, probably more than is justified. But if you're going to tell me I've got a chance to take Justin Fields at like 8, that, like, the value there to me, because just it would not shock me if Justin Fields ends up the best quarterback in this class. Like, that would not shock me at all. Like, the fact that Zach Wilson did this against essentially a bunch of, like the most B-grade schedule of all time. Somehow, like, these things always happen in the draft where, like, I mean, you could not have been a more productive and accurate player than Justin Fields was during his time at Ohio State. So I was happy that we had this selection because it's a little bit counter to some of the ridiculous narratives. And it's like, you know, in horse racing, the value of him at 8, you'd be like, oh my God, like that's someone you want to bet on and get behind. So I thought it was a savvy selection to have Justin there, because I think Justin Fields is going to be, I look at NFL quarterbacks this way. There's basically like 10 of them that can win you the Super Bowl, and everyone else is searching for one of the 10. And that number might be 8, it might be 10. Like, I have no problem projecting Justin Fields to someday be one of those 10.
Yeah, Najee too. I mean, he was just such a fun runner in college, a power guy who also had the light feet and, you know, improved his pass catching and really became sort of the centerpiece. Alabama always had 3 or 4 running backs, but he became the guy, you know, and I just sort of felt like that separated him just a little bit from some of the other backs.
All right, how about the freaks? We like freaks here. It's kind of, I see 3 guys I put down here. Kyle Pitts, Florida, Rondell Moore, Purdue, J.C. Horn. What makes those guys stand out as juice players?
You said you saw 3 freaks. I thought you meant the other 3 of us, but that's all right. That's all right.
There's 2 different kinds of freaks here. I think we're trying to be complimentary here.
I actually like this segment because Pat has nothing to say right now.
I haven't been invited to say anything yet.
No, no, it's good. There's a reason. I'm going to get to the reason later why I'm bitter at Pat. Okay. While Pat and I have a beef right now that he may not even know.
We'll get to that.
Mm. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah, that's a good tease right there. Yeah, Pitts and Horn played against each other. And, you know, J.C. Horn, son of Joe Horn, former NFL receiver, basically they asked him to cover the best receiver on the opposing team, whether it was a slot guy, a quick one like Elijah Moore from Ole Miss, or whether, you know, Kadarius Toney, what have you, but also Kyle Pitts. He went up against a 6'6", 245-pound tight end who can run like the wind. That matchup was one of the best that I watched. You know, and it wasn't every play, but, you know, you saw him squared off in the red zone. It was big, long, physical corner going up against the guy 5 inches taller than him, but that's peak draft geekdom right there, when you see two guys who are sort of at the top of their fields going up against each other, locking horns, if you will. I didn't mean to walk into that terrible pun, but yeah, it was a great tape. And I think it showed the best of both guys' ability because they each kind of won some of the battles. So that's what watching that tape reminded me. I think we got 2 spots locked up on the team right there. We'll use a couple of our high picks to make sure they're on it.
What would we term like peak draft geekdom? Like, would it be like you were Kuipering? Would that be like the term? Would it be like, how would you quantify that?
Yeah, I mean, really, the definition would be talking about the draft at any time outside of, like, you know, May 15th, you know, March 15th to April 1st, or I mean, May 1st or whatever. That's peak draft geeked in there. But yeah, I would accept Kuipering as a word. I think
isn't
that works.
Isn't it like when, like, you know, so like in mid-August, if somebody does a particularly impressive 3 cone time. But then even though it's unofficial, because like, is it like those Florida high school recruits, like the rivals recruits who all run a 4.21?
Yeah, right.
Amazing speed in the high school ranks that somehow they get to college.
Well, everybody gets slower. You run 4.21 in high school, then college, when there's a little more eyeballs on things, you're a 4.35, and then you get to the combine, you're 4.46. You know, that's kind of how it goes.
Yep.
Who would have the best three cone, Eric, of the three of us?
Oh, we're talking ice cream cone. Or are we talking what?
Three flavors?
Anyone needs to see that. All right, let's get to this one. My personal favorite on the team: Grambling guard David Moore.
Yeah,
the bowling ball. That's... He's 6'1", 350.
Love it.
He's whole can of orange juice, man.
Right. You can squeeze him for days. There's no doubt about that. I mean, I watched him play first at the Senior Bowl. He was one of the first invitations to the Senior Bowl, and it kind of caught me off guard. Who is this guy? I didn't know anything about him. Of course, HBCU schools were all canceled this year. You know, Grambling, great tradition, ton of NFL players, but I didn't know the player. Talked to an area scout who said, we had like a 7th-round grade on him coming into the year, but he goes down to Mobile. It's this like round ball of humanity and just starts throwing SEC dudes around. And I thought, okay, we're writing that guy down. Quinn Miners, the kid from Wisconsin Whitewater too, who's Charles's guy, Pete's guy. We've all kind of grown to love him. Those were the two that really stood out for me who, you know, maybe didn't look the part coming into the week, but by the end of the week, you couldn't stop talking about him. So yeah, they just don't build him like David Moore. I mean, shorter than 6'2", long arms, like arms that you'd expect on a tackle. And then this 350-pound, you know, ball of mass. He's a fun player. He's a developmental player.
What about the quote, Eric? Just phenomenal quote here. God gave me some big old calf muscles, some turkey leg calf muscles to go out and explode out of my stance.
Like, if there was doubt about him being on the Juice team, that sealed it. That put him on. That did it.
I can assure you, Therese would 100%. That, yeah, I mean, the HBCU, right? Anyone talking about turkey legs and stuff, that's going to happen there.
Stamp it through.
So was Larnell Coleman's inclusion on the Juice team, Eric, an overt way to kiss up to Dan, our vaunted UMass graduate on the panel here?
I'm such a big UMass football fan.
Right.
Yeah, Larnell.
How could you not be? Yeah.
You do know UMass scored 10 points last season.
But the blocking on the right side was really eye-opening, you know what I mean? That was a... Yeah. Coleman's an interesting one. Obviously, Pete got to talk to Walt Bell about him a little bit. And, you know, he's sort of a project. And, you know, it's like the last guy picked for the kickball team. Like, hey, he's still a member of the team, but I needed a tackle. I needed somebody with some upside. I needed someone with some athleticism. He's new to football. Pete, tell us a little bit more about the legend.
So the legend of Larnell Coleman is simple. He showed up at UMass's vaunted campus in Amherst 5 years ago, and he was a 238-pound defensive end tight end. And he grew and he grew and he put on like 80 pounds. And he has unbelievable. I did watch a little bit of him, and like he looks every bit of it now. Like he looks like, when you look at the line, it's like one of these does not look like the other. You know, when you saw UMass's line this year, and look, from covering the draft the last few years, and certainly not as close as Eric does, the one thing I've learned is that like there's just a dearth of quality tackles in college football who go to the pros. Yeah. I remember the year Billy O'Brien, noted personnel genius. Remember they reached for the guy at the Texans from Alabama State, and I only remember because like they selected him, and we were doing a live show, and I got puberty sweats because I was like, I have no idea who that is. If they call on me to say something, I'm going to completely just stammer. But that was just an example. The kid from Washington State a couple of years ago went way higher than anyone in projection. So there's no good tackle. So you have a perfectly good 6'6", 315-pound guy who's barely played the position, has a ton of upside. You essentially go take him, you redshirt him, and you hope to mold him into an NFL tackle. And at UMass, they raved about his character, the kind of kid he was, said he did everything right, books, weights, studying, and everything. So he'd be an interesting lark. And basically, this prevents you from reaching from a tackle maybe in a year or two, because you can have one, you can bring along.
UMass produces quality individuals.
Yes.
Always. All right. And then how about
despite the poor donations? Yes.
Yes. They don't need my money. Go to the site. You get all 22 guys. But the ultimate is the ultimate all juice guy, Landon Dickerson of Alabama.
He's got the juice, right? And there are some medical worries about him. I'm starting to wonder if he'll be a first round pick. In fact, I don't think he will be. All the injuries he suffered, but it's kind of part of his story too, right? I mean, he had season ending injuries for the last 5 years, started at Florida State. Jimbo left. He went to Bama, who was his runner up coming out of high school. All he does is go there and just assert himself as sort of the guy, the team leader, if you will. People gravitated to him. He's this massive center. I can't remember a center being quite that big in a lot, 6'6 to 335, you know, may have lost weight before his pro day too. And when he, you know, suffered that knee injury against Florida in the SEC title game, instantly he saw everybody come over, surround the truck. That was a great moment, followed by him taking the kneel down steps in the national title game. People raved about his intelligence, his toughness, his character, you know, and he's a decent athlete too. So yeah, he was any guy who can lift Nick Saban off the field with a torn ACL gets our vote.
When I saw him come out in full pads for warmups for the championship game, I was like, oh my right. God. I think I just gave Alabama this juice, as a matter of fact, going into the game. Not that they needed more, but I mean, it was a pretty inspirational sight.
It freaked the trainers out. They were like, wait, what, do we have to stop him from playing? What's going on here? That was a great moment. Absolutely. It was
good stuff. All right. We can't let you go. I am legally obligated, I believe, on a federal statute at this point, or at least NFL. Roger Goodell could suspend me, put me on the commissioner's list if I do not ask. Of the first round quarterbacks, you have five contenders. Trevor Lawrence is going to go first, almost certainly. Zach Wilson is going to go second to the Jets. The big intrigue is at San Francisco, where this starts. Is it going to be Mac Jones? Is it going to be Justin Fields? Trey Lance having another pro day in North Dakota just so he can make scouts go to Fargo twice. I like that.
oh, yeah.
Where do you rank those three guys? Or do you rank anyone higher than three in Lance, Fields, Jones?
Yeah, I do. Actually, my rankings are Lawrence first, followed by Fields. And then right behind him, I have Trey Lance. Had he played more games, had he played a full season last year, who knows? Maybe he's above him, but I actually have Zach Wilson fourth, not by a massive, you know, gap or anything like that. But as Pete pointed out, you know, their schedule was soft as anything. He had all kinds of time to throw. You know, he sort of made things tougher for himself. And I know he's got this blessed arm and all that, and you know, improvisational skills. But sometimes you got to play within the system. He's got a boom bust quality to him, and I've got Mac Jones fifth, but he may have, I don't know, the highest or the second highest floor of anybody. I don't think Trevor Lawrence is going to stink, right? He's going to be really good. But Mac Jones gives you sort of an idea of what you're getting, what you saw it last year. He's a facilitator and a distributor. If that's the guy that the Kyle Shanahan feels like he needs to trade three draft picks to move up nine spots for, I mean, I guess I can get behind it because he needs to be on a team that has talent. The Niners have talent. They're getting everybody back from the Super Bowl team who got hurt last year. Like, I saw him in college. He was good. He certainly made the throws, even if they weren't all, you know, high level of difficulty. But, you know, it's just the fact that the other guys seem to have more upside, more talent, more natural ability. And that's the reason why I put him fifth. So if that's the guy, and that seems to be sort of the tentative favorite, I guess we've heard other reports, but that's about the one of the handful of places where I could see him thriving.
All right. Eric Edholm. At Eric_Edholm, all juice team, support the cause for our buddy Therese Paylor. It's a great piece on Yahoo Sports and great cause. Thank you, Eric.
All right, good jumping on with you, boys. Thank you.
All right, I want to get right to the beef now. I got problems with Pat.
Got to hear.
We need to check this. We need to talk this out like they do on the All-American.
There you go.
Thanks, Spencer James has taught me. All weekend, you can attest, Sully. We were treated to texts. Pictures in the text thread, right? Pictures of Pat with fish.
Yep.
Pictures with a table full of caught fish, fish swimming, a lodge Pat got drunk at or something. I don't know. Pictures of basically Pat with his two sons on a fishing trip. Mm-hmm. All good.
Yep.
Family fishing trip. Then I hear there are sports writer friends on the fishing trip as well, right, Pete? Did you hear this?
You heard that correctly, Dan, yes.
Am I a sports writer? Are you a sports writer?
So this is a bad time to admit this, but I was actually invited on the fishing trip.
Oh, what the hell?
And I declined. I declined.
It's getting worse.
Oh,
it's getting worse.
Well, I'm mad at both of you.
I was invited.
What the hell do I got to do?
Control the list. Right?
To get invited, I'm not. How long we got to be friends, apparently, Pat? To get invited on the fishing trip, the sports writer friend fishing trip.
Who said anything about friends? We're four people on the pod, four cabs, four different directions.
Jeez.
Four Ubers.
I'm hurt. Pete doesn't fish.
No,
that's why I didn't go.
How did he
you
get
chose
invited?
Wisely, Pete.
Sully, did Sully get invited?
No. Mm-mm. And I fish.
All right, Sully, you and I are going to go on our own fishing trip. Screw these <That's right>. Two.
Neither I nor Pete controlled the invite list for this. So I was invited, and then I dragged my two sons along. I wangled them some invitations.
Who was in charge?
I'm not sure I'm even at liberty to
Kent
disclose.
Babb? Kent Babb?
No, Kent Babb was not in charge. Jeff Duncan.
Jeff Duncan.
The Athletic, mm-hmm. Formerly of the Times-Picayune, was in charge.
Mayor of New Orleans.
Unofficial mayor of New Orleans.
You must not have, Princess Katiana must have told Jeff to not invite you. He foresaw bad things. Well, was it Priestess Katiana, who was our friend in New Orleans?
Priestess.
Yeah.
I hope Priestess you got food Empress. Poisoning and caught a hangover.
Well, nothing on the former or the latter, you know. Hey, there may have been one or two.
What local beers did you drink, Pat?
This is so far south in Louisiana that it is basically not even on the hemisphere, all right? It is the swamp country, the marsh country to the extreme south. You go through La Rose, where Ed Orgeron is from, and you keep going south for another hour to basically the end of the continent in the Gulf to Golden Meadow, Louisiana. And when you're in Golden Meadow, you do as the locals do. What few of them are there? And these are Cajun boys. And they were wild. They were very entertaining in many different ways. And so the Cajun boys drink your Dan Wetzel kind of beers. Your Bud Light, your Miller Lite, right. Your Coors Light. They did have Mick Ultra. So that's what we drink. We weren't drinking any. There was no highfalutin beer down there, Peter. It was American mass produced macro brews.
It just rubs it in.
So you're saying you drank all the beers Dan likes? Okay.
Yeah, we drank the beers Dan likes in a lodge that Dan would love. We fished and then we sat around and ate and drank and swapped stories about BS. So that, you know, it was very much a Dan Wetzel kind of thing. Maybe you can get invited next year on good behavior.
I don't know if we'll I want to go. Painful.
Feelings are hurt.
Painful. No one thought, boy, this might be something he'd like. No one even thought of me.
Well, I mean, I got to say, if I had two draft picks, you were third, okay? My sons were the first two. You were the third.
Yeah, thanks. Tied with the rest of the world for third. All right, the beef continues. That's not a good enough explanation. I'm good for
well,
the
now Pete's in the beef, too.
Because I'm a professional, I will keep this podcast going, but that's it. I'm not happy with either of you two. You could make it up to me by sending via Drizzly some beer. That would probably be a good way to make up me. If you want, you guys would like to apologize.
That's beyond Pat's technology. Yeah, so he'll just mail you a check.
No technology cracks from you today, Pete Thamel. This podcast production has been a chore thanks to your
internet. This podcast started later than the Chet Holmgren commitment because of you. All right, let's do this. If you over the weekend, the other big development was this plan in European soccer to create something called the Super League. I won't bore you with the details. There's nothing the soccernistas love more other than telling each other that like a heel pass in the midfield is actually worth watching like 43 straight games to make the soccer exciting. There's nothing they like doing more than lecturing Americans about how soccer works and how it's also wonderful or threatened or whatever. So we're going to spare that. But the Super League is essentially the 12 biggest, richest, most famous clubs in Europe who all belong to different leagues, some in England, some in Spain, some in Italy, and so on, France. and they're going to break off and create their own 12-team Super League. Now, there's much tumult because this would spit in the face of tradition, possibly rob money from weaker teams. It is essentially a lot like college football. If Ohio State and Michigan just pull stakes from the Big Ten, and Oklahoma and Texas pull stakes from the Big 12, and create this Super League, what's left? Not really good for Purdue. Not really good for Kansas State football. So, as you can see, people want tradition, and fans of these other teams are all upset. That's basically what's going on here. This is straight capitalism, which is in part because a bunch of Americans and American hedge funds now own all the most of the big soccer teams in Europe. Yeah. So, there of course, go. We're importing cutthroat, tradition doesn't give a damn American capitalism. However, this leads to a very interesting question is what if this happened in college football? Now, it won't, because even though Ohio State could say make more money if it left the Big Ten in football, it would not be a good thing for its overall university because they have all sorts of different agreements with the other schools. They're recruiting students. They need kids from Pennsylvania and Indiana and Michigan and Chicago to come out of pay out of state tuition. So financially, there's really no TV contract that would make this worthwhile for the overall institution. But that for our purposes, this is what we want to do. If we were to do this, if you were to do the Super League of college football, much the way they're doing the Super League in European soccer, what 12 schools and 12 only would you take? And so we wanted to have since it's draft season, we want to have a draft. We're going to snake draft this or just draft. We'll just go in order. I'll let Pat the fisherman go first. But this is not based on the top 12 teams next year. This isn't even necessarily based on the top 12 programs of the last 20 years. It's based on the richest, most famous, most effective, if you were trying to build the Super League in college football. I think I explained it right. If I didn't, you're too dumb to listen to this podcast. Pretty simple. I don't want to lecture UEFA, and then you got this, and you, oh my God. And then they get all excited because they pronounce Serie A the right way. Like the soccer nieces are the damn worst. They're the absolute worst.
They are.
Worst people.
I learned how to say, but I've since forgotten, Bungaldisha. Is that how you say it?
Bungaldisha.
Bundesliga. Right?
Bundesliga.
Barca. Can't call it Barcelona. They bring in the Reds. You talk about Liverpool. Enough with you people. Enough.
My early COVID memories of like deep in the throes of quarantine was just putting on the Bundesliga because it was like something to watch on a Saturday morning. I'm not a big soccer. I like soccer. I'll watch the World Cup. I'm not a big soccer guy. Probably much like you guys, right?
I watch enormous amounts of soccer, and I am ready to never watch again. I've covered multiple World Cups. Soccer can be very good, but the fact that all the soccer nistas in America are losing their minds, it's making me actually root for this thing. Even though
soccer nistas are a lot. They're hard to handle. They're a lot. If you don't change the subject verb agreement to the English fashion, you know, if it's not
right,
Los Angeles have an advantage, or you don't call the field a pitch, they get very angry. Very angry.
Oh, I see Chelsea's in first place. Top of the charts or whatever they have to have. They have all their little things. Enough. And then if you just sit there and be like, yeah, I don't really like watching. Oh, you don't understand it. I understand it fine. Yes. It's the world's simplest freaking game. Okay. Very, very easy to understand. I just don't like it.
Yeah.
That's it. Or I do like it kinda. Well, you just don't. So whatever. Screw you guys. But we're going to turn this into something good. Our 12 teams. What would we do? Pat, you get the first pick of the Super League. If you are founding the Super League, number one selection.
A lot of pressure there. Okay, and doing this, like I came up with a list of 16 teams for 12 spots, and I basically have four for the top spot. If you're going to have to choose one, I think it's one of four teams. We can go. I don't want to, you know, jump ahead on everybody, but I am going to take, with some reluctance, because you could make a case for any of these four, I think, but I'm going to take Alabama, not just because they are the kingpin now, but they have won national titles, many national titles with three different coaches. So three different eras. They're not reliant on one guy that built the program. And really, you can go back and say they have 17 national titles or whatever their completely bogus number is going back to the 1920s, if you want. So they're always good. They're always going to be good. It is a fan imperative for them to always be good. So it's not like you pick Alabama and then all of a sudden they go down and are 4-8 for 5 years in a row. That will never happen at Alabama. It's not just Nick Saban. Whoever's next will keep this thing rolling. So number one pick, Alabama.
I would not have picked Alabama number one, but you can't argue Alabama, right? Like you have to dial into like, what do you want in your Super League, right? So I'm going to take Notre Dame with the second pick. A national brand. They have resonance from coast to coast. They're really known worldwide. They have obviously the ties to religion. They have ties to big cities. I mean, it's Notre Dame. So now again, I'm not saying Notre Dame is a better program than some other program. I'm not saying anything like that. But if you are building a Super League, Notre Dame's in. End of story.
No one would dispute Notre Dame should be in the top 12. I will take Texas. Texas isn't very good right now, but they're Texas. They're in the league. You would not start the Super League without Texas the same way you would not start the Super League in soccer without whatever, Barcelona. So,
yep.
Pat, back to you.
How about that? A rare burst of agreement here on my notepad. You guys have my 1-2-3 in order. 1-2-3 was Alabama, Notre Dame, Texas. So starting the second round, give me Ohio State. Massive fan base, you know, national fan base to agree because their alums are all over the place. Extreme interest, also an extreme imperative on always being good. Again, just in my lifetime, three different coaches have won national titles. 105,000 seat stadium means, yes, they are committed to being good forever. They do sit in great recruiting territory. So give me the Buckeyes.
Whichever one I pick here is going to bring up an interesting question, and I'm toggling between two right now. So I'm going to take Florida because of the enormous value of Florida in everything college football. And the interesting debate is obviously, and with Texas off the board now, Alabama off the board, and now Florida off the board, is does the Super League need the second schools in those states, the rival schools in those states, which at times, look, Florida State was well ahead of Florida for many, many years. So I take Florida. You know, I won't tell you who I was thinking about for the other one, but there's obviously some good schools left. But I do think that becomes like the fascinating part of this when we wind it down is, does Alabama need Auburn? Texas need A&M? Obviously, they don't play each other anymore. Does Florida need Florida State? So I think that's where you all of a sudden start to feel the tension in this draft.
Absolutely. All right, I'm going to take Georgia. Will be my second round selection. There are obviously some others. I don't think anyone would dispute you'd have Georgia in your top 12 in this league. All right. And unless anyone wants to fight me on Georgia.
No, I mean, I had them in the lowest third of mine. Okay. Just, I mean, I think they belong. I think they absolutely belong. But it gets a little more squishy down there. But I mean,
part of the appeal of the Super League thing is basically that, like, they don't have to earn being in the top 12. You just put yourself right. in. Georgia, I'm not sure really has earned it, but I'm taking Georgia. All right, okay. Back to you, Pat.
Back to me. Okay. In the interest of full geographic appeal, brand name, big city allure, USC.
Yeah, that was.
I want the Trojans in there. That is a program that is obviously operating far below its potential, but generationally great. I want the West Coast in there. I want Los Angeles, and I want a brand name like USC.
I'm going to take LSU. Like, LSU is certainly among these top brands. The talent is there. If you're starting a Super League, you can't exclude the state of Louisiana. You just can't. There's too many NFL players per capita there. It's a giant brand. And obviously, I won't go into who I was picking against. There's certainly some really good arguments left on the board. But I do think I'm taking LSU over the others remaining because it is the lone school in a very important state that needs to be represented.
All right. So this is when we're going to start getting pretty interesting, I think.
Yeah.
So what do we have? We have eight. Okay. Yep. So you're nine.
We got four spots left. We can have the draft. We can argue when we get our final picks after my pick here. I am going to take Penn State.
Yeah.
Yep. As the ninth pick. And I am going to do that because it is a mammoth school and a mammoth fan base. And it gives you at least, unless somebody, you know, puts New England United in there, it gives a a foothold into the Northeast, at least part of the Northeast, is going to be Penn State. So I am taking the Penn State Nittany Lions at 9, which says they probably should be better on the field than what they are. Anyone dispute that one?
Dan, we may be in the midst of a vicious beef, but I agree with, like, everything you said is exactly right. I had Penn State 7 on my list.
See, this would have been a nice conversation if we were sitting around fishing.
It would have.
With a moderately flavored domestic beer.
Yeah.
With an extremely light, largely water beverage.
Mostly mediocre.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. All mediocre.
All right. No. Here we are. Big picks now.
Ooh. Yeah. 10, 11, 12.
I mean, number 13 is screwed.
Yeah.
I already know who number 13 is for everybody on this panel. I already know. So just keep going.
Sully, Tennessee is not 13th. It's lower.
Tennessee is not 23.
Yeah.
Yes.
And we'll get to it.
Yeah. Oh, God. Sully's going to come off the top rope with the impassioned Tennessee plea.
First, he doesn't get invited on the trip. Now this. He's better.
Yeah. All right. He's an hour into the Joe Milton era. Let him dream. That's all right.
All right. Pat, who is number 9 for you?
It is difficult here because, we're getting into territorial overlap to a degree versus, tradition, that sort of thing. I'm taking Texas A&M. I'm going to go ahead and put the Aggies in there. You do get two schools from Texas. Texas is a big-ass state, in case you haven't heard. A big-ass football state, in fact. They are spending as much money as anyone on earth on football. They are as committed as anybody. They have underachieved throughout their history, if you look at it. But I think that they are on the rise. They had their big year this year. I mean, there's no reason for the next 20 years, if this is a long-term thing, to think that Texas A&M is not going to be a top 10 program.
All right, so here let's debate this. And I don't know who you're going to pick, Pete, but is Texas A&M in this over Oklahoma? Does Oklahoma get left out? Maybe, Pete, you're going to pick Oklahoma.
I mean, I will just tell you who I have left. How about this?
Why do we talk about that? Who you got left?
Let's go through who I have left. And so I have in no order Oklahoma, Michigan, Clemson, Stanford, and BYU.
Mm.
Now, I'm just thinking, like, it's a super league, right? And you need you want to engage the country. BYU is a bit of a flyer, but I just thought, they're at least an interesting conversation. I don't think I was going to pick them. Now, do we only want one team on the West Coast in our Super League?
Yeah.
That sounds to go Austin to LA sounds a little bit crazy, right? So do you put UCLA in? I picked Stanford because of the brand in the Bay. Like, I took Oregon off because I just thought market-wise it made so much more sense for Stanford. Now, Phil Knight would not let a Super League happen without Oregon, right? You talk about the great collisions of all this happening. So I should actually have Oregon on.
I actually had Washington as a potential because of the market.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even though they haven't done much, Oregon's a better program. Stanford, then you could maybe argue this is actually academics. And then somebody, I don't think they're ready. I agree with you on that. Oklahoma. So you had Oklahoma, Clemson. The other one Michigan. I had was Michigan. Yeah, Michigan. So, all right, make your pick.
So if I have to pick one here, it's hard. This is hard. Like there's no other way to say it because you're going for long term. But I think like right now, if I'm forming a league, I can't form a league without Clemson. I can't do it. And I have a ton of respect for Oklahoma. We obviously know what Michigan was and can be someday again. But right now, if I'm starting this thing, you can't leave Clemson on the sidelines. So I will leave some of those other fine institutions on the sidelines, and I will take my slide through the practice facility out to the putt-putt green and roll with Dabo. And just because Dan can't pronounce the coach's name doesn't mean we shouldn't put him in our
Coach Sweeney. Coach Sweeney.
Coach Sweeney.
Coach Sweeney. It's a made up word. Dabo is not a word. He made it up. It was Daboy. Dabo. Is it Dabo? Is that it?
Hey, we're just gonna let you flail. All right. Just like you're alone on your
I've had 15 conversations with the guy. I don't know.
We shortened the made up word that was a shortening of two words to just one syllable. Just make a dab. Hey, Dab. Dab got a
Coach
question.
Sweeney gets the 11 side. All right. So to me, this comes down to you either have to go geographic. And at that point, I think I would take Washington. But if we're talking about it down to Michigan and Oklahoma, I think Texas A&M stole Oklahoma's spot, and I will go with Michigan. It's still the big house, huge presence in the East Coast through Chicago. You know, it's three Big Ten teams, but these are the three big ones. I would take the University of Michigan as my 12th spot, underachieving or not. That's how I would construct my Super League. But my problem with this Super League is simply it's just USC out west.
Yep. No, then that, yeah. I mean, that's the problem with it. It is geographically out of whack to a degree, but the whole sport already.
This is what they're doing in Europe. This is essentially it. Imagine waking up today. This is why all of your soccernista friends are like all in a panic, because they really like pretending that they're fans of like a obscure, crappy,
sure,
you know, B division, you know, English team. I'm a fan of
Blackpool. Yeah.
I love Crystal Palace.
But just imagine waking up and your fan is, you know, the Purdue fan going, wait, what? What do we got? How are we selling tickets?
Does this mean we're now in a league with Indiana State?
I think next pod, we pick the bottom 12. The not super league.
Oh, that would
like
be good.
Like Wake Forest, Purdue, Syracuse. Who are the football programs that would be on the cusp of relegation?
All right, that would be good.
If it's the bottom of the Power Six or
yes,
Power Five, yeah,
power. Okay, yeah, bottom okay, of the Power yeah. Power Five.
That's I think the next that would pod.
Be a yeah, that would be a pretty a pretty good chat.
Who is all Bayern right. and PSG? Who are the top 10 fan bases and top 10 money teams that are saying no? We are holding on to tradition.
Oh, boy.
In America, nobody.
Yeah, none.
Exactly. What?
The only possibility would be Notre Dame. We're still independent, damn it.
Yeah, Notre Dame. That's it. All right. Yeah. Who's holding
maybe
on to
anything? Maybe play at Ball State in Indiana every year.
We have obscure cryptocurrencies going up like 1,000% in like 2 hours. Come on, this is the United States of America. We screw everybody.
Evidently, they're jumping from 100 million a team to 400 million a team in this league. So that's some shattering money right there. 400 million a year.
Not bad.
Not bad. All right, let me get to this too. We talked NFL draft earlier. I have new information that has me concerned about Trevor Lawrence as the number one overall pick. Not the SI comments about not being committed. We went over that last episode. What concerns me is I don't know if Trevor thinks big enough. I don't know if he dreams big enough. I don't know if he sets standards of excellence high enough to win a Super Bowl and dominate pro football because of his taste in toasters. That $300 toaster, we were all mesmerized on the wedding registry. The one that has 63 settings, going to handle a baffling 6 different foods, which we can't comprehend. It turns out that thing ain't in the toaster market.
Come on.
That's like buying a Chevy Traverse and saying you got a luxury car. It's good. It's a good toaster. I went down the toaster rabbit hole last week, fellas.
Of course you did.
What do you got? Would anyone like the ProLine Series 2-slice automatic toaster? This toaster is equipped with a host of smart features for effortless toasting because toasting is hard.
I want my toaster to work. I want the toaster to work. I don't want it to be effortless.
I put too much effort into my morning toast.
Yeah. You do putting the bread in the toaster and pressing the thing down.
How freaking lazy are you? $500 for this thing.
$500.
Yeah, it has
though,
I will give it this. It has an exclusive keep warm function.
Okay. That's valuable.
For 3 minutes after you're toasting, it maintains peak toaster heat.
That's valuable.
Because, yeah, you're cooking your eggs. A lot going on breakfast.
Yeah, and now, it's not always all coming together at the same time. And the toast is usually the first casualty.
And you can't butter the toast right. Yes. Right. So you get what this is what the number one pick should be going after. This kind of quality. Actually, this is like a mid-round pick. How about this one? The dual-lit gold toaster. 24-karat gold toaster.
Oh, come on.
Hell yes.
Cut it out. Gold toaster.
Combines beauty, class, and functionality into one thing.
That is obnoxious.
A gold toaster. It's 168 components are assembled by hand for that special touch.
Oh, God.
I think the regular toaster is, too. It's just, like, not by, lowly paid third world employees, right. You know? The designer's name is inscribed on the bottom plate of the toaster. It is individualized.
On the bottom? I mean, you don't even get to show that off, then. If this toaster appears to be all about showing off, then why the designer's name on the side?
$1,100 for the $1,100 for a toaster.
Is this like, does Warren Buffett have this toaster?
I don't know. They don't mention
that. No, Warren Buffett's too every man to have an $1,100 toaster. Yeah,
right. So who would? Jeff Bezos? Who has this toaster?
Trevor Lawrence has that kind of money. Trevor Lawrence, if you're going to get into the toaster market, you got to jump all in. That's my thing. If you're going to be, if you're going, I'm the franchise quarterback. I'm going to take the Jacksonville Jaguars to its first ever Super Bowl. I want a guy who says, oh, no, I don't just want the $300 toaster. I want the $1,100 toaster. I need a gold-plated toaster. That's why I'm worried. How about this one? Bargain price of $1,000. But this one is the most absurd. Because these aren't toasters like those big. You can buy like a $5,000 toaster that's like those ones at the Fairfield Inn. That you put the conveyor belt.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Sure. People are just jamming bagels in there and all that.
Are those really $5,000?
Yeah.
I don't think anything at a Fairfield Inn costs $5,000.
Oh, no, that toaster, it's big time. That toaster is big time. Really? This is called the Noun. The Noun can only handle two slices. However, it's made by Bugatti. It is a world class toaster. The Noun is made of glass.
What?
Which means you can watch your toast get toasted.
You don't have to like peer in from the top and say, okay, I think it's browning.
No, nope.
You can actually just
side view, baby.
Okay. That would be cool once.
How much time do these people have on their hand? They're excited about watching toast get toasted.
Well, it is a good safeguard when you can say, oh my God, it's burning. I got to get it out now. As opposed to sometimes when, you know, it's as things here in our household, sometimes the setting gets moved and you don't notice the setting has been moved. And all of a sudden you have carbonized bread because it's scorched. So
when Pat called Dan to see if he could go on the fishing trip, I said, you know, I think Dan's going to be busy watching his toast. So he probably can't make it.
The expense is in the glass heat transfer technology. So you can see it, but the glass doesn't get hot, so you burn yourself.
Tremendous. Tremendous. How much is the glass one?
1,000. There was another that you...
I'm now worried. Like, our toaster had better last for the rest of my life, because if the toaster market is skyrocketing in terms of price, I don't want to pay $200 to $1,100 for my next toaster. So I hope there is no next toaster.
Depends how whether you want to step it up. You're more seventh round draft pick, or you number one overall? That's really the question here.
I have the paycheck of a seventh round draft pick.
All right. And this is from podcast listener James Stevenson, at James Stevenson. He's a Husker alum who got me in on this one. This toaster, it's a little lower price because it's not made of gold, but you add water. You add 5 cc's of water. This is the decisive factor in its revolutionary technology. 5 cc's of water are poured into the toaster at the beginning of the toast. So you got to spend a lot of time on this one.
Yeah, clearly.
With like an eyedropper?
You have to water your toast.
Water in the air heats more rapidly than dry air, which I did not know. This creates a thin layer of steam that envelops the bread, lightly toasting its surface while keeping the inner moisture of the bread and flavor from escaping.
This may be worse than the Soccernista is talking about the pitch.
The toaster snob market is amazing, I will
at
say.
At 140 degrees Fahrenheit, a bread's interior fluffiness and flavor are fully restored. At 320 degrees Fahrenheit, the surface starts to turn golden brown. And at 428, the toast begins to brown. So the key with the steam cooking is just merging that all together.
So, like,
here's what I'm trying to figure. Okay, you're at a cocktail party, you know, back when we're eventually past the pandemic completely and you can go to cocktail parties again, you're talking to somebody. It's like, so what do you do? I'm an engineer. Oh, really? What kind of engineering do you do? Toaster engineering. Yeah, I figure out how to equip a toaster with water to make the perfect piece of toast. What do you run the other way from that person?
All right. Well, speaking of misplaced talents, let me end the show with this. We've done this segment, Real Men of Genius, before. You know, people who really invent things that are of all that really needed to be done. Although I think during a pandemic, I think we could have had these guys spend more time on the vax, get the vaccine out a week quicker. But we're going to give a shout out here to a 24-year-old software engineer named Rashik Zahid. I'll just read this from TheVerge.com. We've all been there. You're craving a McFlurry or a Shamrock Shake. We've all been
there. Have we all been there?
Yeah, McFlurries are good. I don't know. Shamrock Shake, limited release. Anyway, you drive to McDonald's, excited to get some ice cream. But when you finally make it to the counter, you hear those dreaded, devastating words. The ice cream machine is broken.
The French fry machine's never broken, by the way. But the ice cream machine is broken like a third of a time.
There you go, Pete. Yeah, you see? Absolutely. Pete knows.
Yes.
Well, Rashik came along and launched an app and a website called McBroken.
I like Rashik. I really do.
The site displays a map of every McDonald's location in the United States, denoted by clusters of dots. Locations with a working ice cream machine get a green dot, and the ones that are broken get a red.
So it's like Waze.
It is. What he does is he set up the app to every McDonald's in America, and it is constantly ordering a shake. But the order never goes through. And the ones that say they can't do it, they're broken. So like currently, and then he displays this on a map. So if you go to McBroken.com, before you go out, you know where to go. Like right now, this is a plague. 26.6% of the McDonald's in San Francisco have a broken McFlurry machine. Basically, it's the people saying, I don't want to make the McFlurries. That's what it is, because it's a pain in the ass.
Yeah. Right. We all know a lot of bartenders. I think that's pretty safe to say. I've spent a lot of time around bartenders. Every bartender I know hates making like frozen fruity drinks, right?
Oh,
like,
yeah, sure.
Yeah. So like, you know, when the bar gets crowded, oh, our blender's broke, like magically, you know, like I'm not making your, I don't know, your Mai Tai or whatever it is, right? Like your, yeah.
When it's busy, they want a shot of Jack and a Miller Lite, right?
Correct.
They want something simple.
Those are the favorite customers, yeah.
They just want to keep the machine moving so the tips keep going, right? They don't want to take 3 minutes to like, bzzz, you know. So for your, what's the one with Kahlua?
White Russian?
Yeah, not the white Russian.
They don't really, they don't spin it up. Whatever.
Yeah. I don't know the old lady drinks, but yes. Yes, they don't want you getting like a malted milkshake at their bar. So that happens quite frequently on Cape Cod. The mysterious blender break. So
understand. Pat, will you use McBroken?
No, absolutely, I will not. But I admire the industry behind it. I am concerned about Rashik. You know that this is again what he's putting his brain power into, because clearly he has brain power. But if it's just monitoring the status of the shake machines at America's McDonald's, I think we could do more with that.
I can tell
power.
You right now, the McDonald's at 2720 West Broadway in Louisville.
Yeah.
The McDonald's at 207 West Broadway.
Uh-huh.
The McDonald's right off of I-65 at 3005 Fern Valley Road.
Okay. South End. Yeah.
And the McDonald's at 8220 Preston Highway in Okolona, Kentucky.
Also South End, yes.
Yeah, they all have broken McDonald's ice cream machines right now.
Okay, so if you're downtown or South End, you're in trouble. You better get traveling to get your McFlurry.
You got it. Well, I mean, you can go right over here to 2800 Outer Loop. That's near one of the broken.
Yeah, so that's also
this is
South
a service End. That this is providing.
It is. No, Fantastic. Save people time and gas money. If you're traveling around.
Here's my thought on McBroken. I think it's genius. And I think if I owned an edibles company or a marijuana dispensary, I would advertise heavily on McBroken. All right. I would pour a lot of my, like, if I was looking for my target audience, like, both Cheech and Chong are all over McBroken.
Dude, I want a McFlurry, but I don't want to drive all the way over there. Find out.
Dude, if it's broken, yeah. My soul will be crushed.
Don't drive while eating your edibles.
I was going to say, if you just hit the edible, don't drive.
Don't drive. All right, one more. We got the ongoing saga. We need an update. And I admit I forgot about this story.
An epic ongoing saga.
This is an ongoing saga. All right. Last about 250 days ago, last August, really, was a story. Up in Connecticut, a 800-pound beefalo escaped a truck that had delivered it to a meat processing plant. You remember this story? Yes. The beefalo got loose in the woods of western Connecticut, which has very dense woods.
Literally ran for his life.
Ran for his life. And we were rooting him on.
Yes, we were.
Although we like to eat beefalo. This was like Andy and Red getting to, what do they say that thing? Zeho and Taneo, right? They're walking the beach, fixing up an old boat. You know, some birds are not meant to be caged. And this beefalo is that. The beefalo got loose and we lost track of the story. I assumed that like a day later, they caught this beefalo, but they did not. The Shawshank Redemption of beefalo was on the loose until last week.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Nicknamed Buddy.
Went like 250 plus days on the lam.
250 days on the run. Buddy the beefalo was cruising around Connecticut. After making a run for it when being loaded off a truck at a meat processing plant in Plymouth, Connecticut. His adventures including appearing on a wildlife camera set up by police, failed attempts to lure him into a pen with food, and there were several social media accounts he apparently signed up for. Plymouth police announced last Wednesday they posted Buddy's picture on their social media account with the word captured stamped across in red letters. Buddy was back in the pen. The police captain said his capture was the result of a community effort from spotting him, feeding him throughout the winter, and the experts who were able to make the final capture. We'd like to thank all of those who brought this adventure to a successful resolution.
But a happy ending. Happy ending. Yeah, right.
How? Are they going to carve him up? Is he like, can
you? No, Buddy's going to live. They're sending him to some, you know, wild animal farm in like Florida.
Oh, that's right. Right. All right.
In Gainesville, Florida. I don't know. Did they ask him? Does Buddy want to go to that dump?
Critter Creek Farm Sanctuary in Gainesville.
Oh, that sounds brutal.
The Critter Creek.
You know what sounds more brutal? Being carved up and served on plates. From Buddy's standpoint, you'll take it.
It's better than the death penalty. I'll give him that. But, I mean, he's a New England buffalo. It's warm down there. Might be hot.
He can adjust. It's fine. A lot of people from New England go to Florida, right? Don't they?
Yeah.
Including Pete Thamel's parents, I believe.
They sure migrated. Do. Yeah. They sure do. So
all this does is encourage other beefalo to make a run for it. He got spared for running.
I encourage all beefalo to make a run for it, hoping they don't all escape or else we don't get to eat them anymore. But give it a shot.
This is a tough one for me. I was torn. I'm glad he got some time out there.
You know what? Fortune favors the bold. He made a run for it. He didn't just meekly submit.
All right. That's our pod for the day. We can't have any more stupid news. We made sure you can get a shake. We told you about the beefalo.
We didn't ever provide toasters. Anything of substance other than bringing Ed Holm in.
Ed Holm.
Ed Holm, yeah.
You should listen to Ed Holm's pot. Anything with Ed Holm, you'll get real football talk, not the nonsense we provide. We will talk to you later this week. Be back. Who knows with what. Talk to you then.